This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 23rd of September 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today it's time for our fortnightly theatre chat, and who better to have with us here in studio than Matt Wolfe, theatre critic for the International New York Times. This month has been a busy one for show openings in London, but Matt has very kindly whittled them down to three to keep on your radar. Up for discussion, we have Nicole Kidman's return to the stage in Photograph 51 at the Noel Coward Theatre, over at the Royal Court, black comedy Hangmen, and we'll end up at the Adelphi for the musical Kinky Boots. Lots of anticipation about that one. That is all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you. Good to have you with us. Great pleasure, Tom.
It's 17 years since we last saw the Australian actress Nicole Kidman on the London stage as she starred in David Hare's interpretation of Schnitzler's La Ronde entitled The Blue Room. Now she's back, this time starring in Anna Ziegler's play Photograph 51 as Rosalind Franklin, the woman who some say cracked DNA before old Crick and Watson. Matt, tell us a bit about the plot of this show. Is it a bit about, you know, the role of women and how often they're overlooked or forgotten in history?
Yeah, I mean, the play is written by an American woman, actually, Anna Ziegler, and I think that she intends the play as kind of a historical corrective. The idea that the female scientist in general, and Rosalind Franklin in particular, is left out of history books. And exactly as you've said, Crick and Watson and Morris Wilkins in the early 60s shared a Nobel Prize for their research into the genuinely pioneering work of DNA. And the feeling was and remains that Rosalind Franklin, who by that point had died, sadly, of ovarian cancer at age 37, her kind of preparatory work had been equally groundbreaking, enabling these men to then triumph after her death, and had not been sufficiently acknowledged. If you walk along the Strand by King's College, you actually, the real Rosalind Franklin face is there as one of the people who remains to this day associated with King's College. So it's a ripe subject for theatricalization.
And Photograph 51, we should interpret, of course, was one of the sort of seminal images that she took, one of these important X-ray images that she then shared with some of those, with her for her male counterparts, of course. Interesting, you talked about the, you know, the real face of this woman. What about Nicole Kidman's portrayal? Much anticipated return to London stage, of course.
I thought she was very good in it. And she's very canny to have chosen this part. And I don't mean canny at all in a cynical way. But, you know, somebody of her stature gets to pick and choose what she wants to do. Clearly, she doesn't have to do any more theater. She's been saying for quite a long time that she wanted to come back to the stage. She had a good time doing the Blue Room at the Don Mar in London and then on Broadway. And that was 17 years ago. That's a long time. I mean, she waits another 17 years till the next play. She'll be in her mid-60s, which is kind of an alarming thought. But as everyone remembers from 17 years ago, the phrase that sort of attached to her like a periwinkle to a rock was pure theatrical Viagra, coined by my fabulous colleague Charlie Spencer, formerly the Daily Telegraph. I think the phrase for this one might be more appropriately pure theatrical saltpeter, because the thing about this performance and the part, very deliberately, I'm sure, from Nicole Kidman's perspective, is that it's not about eroticism. It's not in any way about taking her clothes off. She keeps all of her clothes very definitely on. And it's about the life of the mind, not the life of the body. So much so that much is made in the course of the play about what other desires does she have? Does she go on dates? Is she interested in any of that? Or is it just all about being in the laboratory, wearing her white smock and cracking on with her work? And she, I think, as a character, runs the risk of being maybe a little bit humorless and a little bit high-minded. And I think one of Nicole Kidman's genuine achievements is to humanize this character who might seem all those other things, might seem a little too starchy for comfort. Of course, and who knows if this is what it was really like, but Anna Ziegler suggests in the course of the play that at least one of these three scientists who went on to take the Nobel Prize, Morris Wilkins, harbored a kind of unrequited or not expressible crush on Rosalind Franklin, which wasn't possible for professional reasons and also perhaps because Rosalind Franklin didn't allow it. I don't know. My temptation is to doubt that that was really the case. It seems like a theatrical contrivance, but it allows for there to be some sort of drama.
A bit of a frisson. And what about the direction? Because it's Michael Grandy, another sort of, you know, Grandy, really, of British theatre. I'm sure a lot of our even international listeners will have seen a lot of his work before. A good job.
Grandage the Grandy. I like that.
I try my best, man.
Yeah, you do it effortlessly, Tom. the thing about this play for him is that it's a return to a theatre where he had a five-play season a year or more ago, since which time, interestingly, he's directed his first film as yet unreleased, because, you know, it takes films a long time, and it's called Genius. And guess who one of the stars of the movie is? Yes, a certain Ms. Kidman. So you can see the chain of command. You can see the double helix, one might even say, that led...
That's very elegantly done.
I don't know. That led to this play and production happening. It feels like a return to form for Michael. I think when he had his five-play season at the Noel Coward previously, inevitably with five plays, some were better than others, and maybe not all of them had the same amount of weight and clout. He's been away. He's now back in his first love, which is the theater, and it really feels as if he's re-energized by having been away. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. It's a very pacey, astutely realized production. It's brilliantly designed by his personal and professional partner, Chris Oram, who's a genius designer anyway, and this is one of Chris Oram's very best designs, sort of suggesting King's College post World War II bombing, so kind of rubble strewn, but still a place of academic inquiry. It's beautifully lit, and it has a fantastic soundscape by Adam Cork that makes you feel as if on stage you're watching a thriller. So you sort of feel as if maybe the Michael who's gone away to do movies has come back with something of that celluloid know-how, and he's applied that to the world of theater.
Lovely stuff. You can see it for yourself, of course, at the Noel Coward Theatre until the 21st of November. That's where Photograph 51 is on. Let's move, as promised, Matt, to the Royal Court, where Olivier Award-winning playwright Martin McDonagh's latest production, Hangmen, is on, set in a pub in Oldham, distant from these ivory towers of academe. The second best hangman in England learns the news that hanging has been abolished. There's quite a few fairly tasteless puns I could do here. I'll avoid them. Okay. Tell us a bit about how the story unfolds from there, Matt.
Well, this is an extraordinary achievement, I think, on every level. But I'm a great, great, great Martin McDonagh fan. And a little bit like Nicole Kidman having a homecoming to the London stage after 17 years, this is Martin McDonagh's first new play. He's had revivals, one of which was directed by Michael Grandage. But this is his first new play to be seen in London in a dozen years, since a brilliant play of his called The Pillow Man was done at the National. With a then pre-Doctor Who David Tennant, if memory serves. This is, as you say, a play set in the 60s, first in 63, the first scene in 63, then 2 years later, 1965, at the time that capital punishment ceased to be possible in this country, although the play does rather suggestively make the point that even though capital punishment may no longer have been legal, killings do, of course, continue, whether or not state-sanctioned. And Martin McDonagh has always been very interested in kind of the mechanics of violence, the ethos of violence, the landscape of violence amongst women as well as men. It's by no means a male-only preserve. But the wonderful thing about McDonagh's stuff, and he has about as singular a voice as any living playwright, is that although the milieu may be kind of grim and even tough going, it's always interlaced and interspersed with humor, sometimes gut-busting humor, often politically incorrect, very frequently unquotable, a lot of things that you wouldn't say on air or in print. But somehow, in the mouths of the characters, it seems right and it makes sense. And it's not about Martin McDonagh showing off. It's about him suggesting that people are not just one thing. Just because the character in the play, played beautifully by David Morrissey, the second best hangman in Britain, has, you know, all sorts of carnage and corpses to show for himself, he also has a wife and he has a daughter and he functions in those worlds. And a lot of what he does is a little odd and sometimes very funny. And you're laughing with him. Sometimes you're laughing at him. It's a remarkably astute production by Matthew Dunster, who's a fast-rising director who, interestingly, like Michael Grandage, used to be an actor. And it's interesting, these directors who used to be actors, because you really do get the sense that they know what actors can do and that they bring out the best from their actors. And the plot of this play is extremely ingenious because it fills real people with fictional people, and some of the fictional people are amalgams of real people. But the story, although the backdrop is actual, the story is entirely invented, and you have this kind of self-enclosed community in this Oldham pub. The Northern accents are very strong, so people should be prepared for that. And into this community comes this guy named Peter Mooney, who's a Londoner, and you're not quite sure why he's there, who he is, what's going on, and he kind of rattles the cage of this Oldham pub. And I really shouldn't say too much more, except to say that it's only about 3 or 4 minutes into the play before the audience, I don't know that they're necessarily laughing, but they're smiling in recognition at McDonough's voice, because it just doesn't sound like anyone else. And you realize after a dozen years of not hearing it afresh that you'd sort of missed it. It's like welcoming an old friend home.
Beautifully put. And it's interesting talking about Grandage going to the silver screen, of course. I mean, probably maybe recently more people will be familiar perhaps with Martin McDonough through his movie work, where he's written and directed, of course, on the screen. A welcome return. Do you detect when you see even these very, very capable playwrights at work a difference when they've been, I don't know, to Hollywood and back? Can you sort of tell that? Does it add something extra? Does it take something away?
Yeah, I do really think with the Nicole Kidman play that Grandage's direction has been informed by switching, you know, from one discipline to the other. This play, I wouldn't say that the writing of this play necessarily feels saturated with Hollywood. And I don't even think that this play by Martin McDonagh is a blueprint for a film. Interestingly, Martin McDonagh won an Oscar for a short very early on, and then he was involved with two films, In Bruges, which is kind of an indie cult favorite, and Seven Psychopaths, which wasn't terribly successful, but it had in it some of the actors that he really loves, like Sam Rockwell. But none of his plays, to date anyway, has actually been made into a film. So I don't think he's looking at one as a springboard for the other. I think he really loves in the theater what the theater can do uniquely. The thing about his plays is that they're not really naturalistic. People talk a kind of heightened language. It's not necessarily all that elegant, but it's just very particular. And in the landscape of film, I think it might sound a little odd, but in the landscape of the theater, you don't question it. For instance, there's a very funny exchange relatively late into Hangmen, where this mysterious Londoner, played brilliantly by Johnny Flynn, has a conversation about or a sort of little mini monologue about the difference between Rice Krispies and Weetabix. And he kind of goes on about this with great philosophical import. And I think in a movie you'd think, huh? But in a Martin McDonagh play, you don't even question it. It's actually par for the course.
It all makes sense. Hangmen is on at the Royal Court until the 10th of October. Let's end, Matt, shall we, with a kick in the form of colourful musical Kinky Boots, which has hit the Adelphi Theatre. All singing, all dancing production based on the 2005 film of the same name sees Harvey Fierstein take up the role of playwright and has music and lyrics by Cyndi Lauper, no less. Matt, for those not familiar with the story, give us a quick recap of what Kinky Boots has to offer.
Well, the story is pretty slender. Basically, Charlie Price, a nice guy in Northampton, inherits Dad's shoe business when Dad conveniently drops dead. And Charlie wasn't going to do this because he was going to move to London and live the London high life with his fiancée, presumably wife. But events transpire otherwise. And the shoe factory has been failing. And how to restore the fortunes of the shoe factory. Charlie comes into contact with a drag artist, transvestite by the drag name of Lola. The character's real name is Simon, so it's Simon or Lola, who is being mugged. Charlie intercedes in the mugging, and that leads to Charlie and Lola becoming friends. And Charlie realizes, hey, these thigh-high, you know, Technicolor boots could, in fact, restore the fortunes of the Northampton Shoe Factory. I hadn't quite realized, but listeners will forgive me if I say I don't know much about footwear in Northampton. I didn't necessarily think that there was a huge market for this kind of thing in the Midlands, but maybe.
I think so. Yeah. Much more than anyone could ever have imagined.
Who would have thunk it? But it's basically a pretext for a feel-good musical. If there were ever a musical that wants you to get up and dance in the aisles, this is it, as you might expect from the fact that they hired Cyndi Lauper.
Well, I was going to ask, we have to talk about that.
Songstress of Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Exactly. What's this? What kind of score? What's she created? Is it kind of very much what you would have anticipated when learning that she was going to do the score?
I would imagine the brief from the producers to her, because, you know, she needed to be slightly cajoled into doing this. She'd never written for the theater before. And it's a very bouncy, infectious score. And I'm sure the producers said, well, make it a score where the audiences just want to have fun. And so they will have fun. I mean, we were praising with Martin McDonagh his kind of singular, unique gift for language. I, with respect, think that that's probably not something people would come away with here, with lyrics like everybody say yeah, 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 yeah. But then again, the Beatles had, you know, not dissimilar lyrics on occasion, and they did very well. It suits the landscape of the material. These are not people who are going to sing as if they're in a Stephen Sondheim show. So it's fine. The main, I think, achievement of the show in performance terms in London, as it was on Broadway, is the character who plays Lola, the drag artiste. On Broadway, the part won a Tony Award for the American performer Billy Porter, who was sensational in the role. And here, because we're in Britain and it's British set, the part is played by a Brit, Matt Henry, a finalist from The Voice, who I wasn't really familiar with before this. And he's really wonderful. The part of Charlie is a bigger role, but unfortunately, the way the show is conceived, Charlie is in every way the straight man to Lola, who kind of walks away, or shall we say, sashays away with the material. And the whole sort of second half is a long, elaborate plea to be yourself, accept other people, love yourself. You can fill in the fortune cookie bromide, but, you know, wear glistening glitter, wonderful boots, and preferably sequins to go with it while you're being yourself.
That's as good advice as you're going to hear anywhere, I would say. At the Adelphi Theatre, that's Kinky Boots. It continues into 2016, as I gather. Mm-hmm. That brings us to the end of today's show. Matt Wolfe, thanks as always. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks too to our producer, Holly Fisher. Join us again tomorrow for our book review with Kathy Rensenbrink. But for now, thanks very much for tuning in.